Tour Junkies.
What's going on, golf addicts? Thank you for downloading the Tour Junkies podcast. This episode is a full-length interview with a rookie caddy on the PGA Tour, Gino Bonelli. You may not know Gino. You may not even know who he caddies for. It's a guy named Joel Damon. He's a pretty good player. Both rookies on tour this season, and Gino is hysterical. He is famously the caddy who very recently put out a tweet applying to take the caddy position for Rory McIlroy. Wrote him a great letter, job application, if you will. Got a lot of notoriety. Gino's a pretty funny guy. So we sit down and talk with Gino for a while about the Guinness Book of World Records that he holds, breaking arms on the golf course, marriage advice for Rory, and, you know, a time when he cried as a caddy during an event. It's pretty funny stuff. You guys are going to enjoy this episode. Be sure you follow Gino on Twitter as well. He's a great dude. This episode is brought to you by Swing Caddy. Listen, we continue to have a lot of success with the Swing Caddy SC200, and we've got a promo code for you. If you go to our website, tourjunkies.com, click on the Swing Caddy promo link at the top. It takes you to the Swing Caddy page. When you get ready to check out, in the promo box, type in Tour Junkies, all one word, all lowercase, hit apply. And instead of buying the Swing Caddy for $350, you get to buy it for $289. It's like a TrackMan in your pocket. Instead of spending 20 grand, you can get it for 290 bucks, which is pretty cool, and we've enjoyed using it.
Well, Pat,
a ton.
I think we just get into
it. We hope you guys enjoy this episode with Gino Bonelli.
Like, you know,
it's a good one.
Like,
thanks again. Enjoy.
We're kindred spirits. I feel like the off-the-cuff game, and you're a very humorous guy. We've trolled your Twitter account pretty well today. And I just think
the grass video, by the way, had me
hilarious.
Cracking up, because I remember being a kid on the golf course and making the whistle sound with grass.
Yeah, that was a pretty funny story. So I don't know. Do you want to hear the backstory with that one?
Yes.
Not too long. So we're in Evansville, Indiana, at the Victoria National on the Web Tour last year, and that was the second hole of the day, and this ugly cloud rolled in, and they blew the horn for dangerous conditions, and the marshal came by and said, "Could be 20 minutes. It could be 2 hours. We don't know. You can either hold in place or come in." And everybody in the group was like, "I'm going inside." And I'm like, "It's going to be 15 minutes. I'm going to wait here." So I crossed under a tree, and the skies opened up, and it was pouring rain. And I'm out there. I'm like, "Oh my!" Like, the rain was coming through the umbrella. It was raining hard. And I was there for about an hour. And, you know, just messing with Joel, I was like, "I'm going to make some sort of survival video out here." And I did, and it turned out pretty good. So I sent him I texted it to him, and he never even responded. And then somebody came out like an hour later and said, "Hey, do you need a ride in?" And I'm like, "Yes, thank you." So I got a ride, and we ended up going to the driving range, and we're hitting balls to before we go back out on the golf course. And I think somebody like Craig Barlow or something comes up to me. He goes, "Your video was awesome." And Joel hadn't said a word to me about it. He goes, "Just put it on the TV in the locker room through Bluetooth connection or something." And he goes, "It was hilarious." So
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's how that
was. It was a very funny video. Well, we've enjoyed trolling you a little bit these last couple of days. Just as we've, you know, what really got our attention was obviously your open application to Rory, which we can definitely get to here in a little bit. But Pat, do you want to kind of start off by us maybe getting to know Gino a little bit better and ask him some questions?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
You put me on the spot there. I don't usually open us up.
Well, no, I mean, right now we're just in the conversation. That's what I was saying. Like, you know,
we're not even gonna do it like we typically record. We're just gonna start getting.
I'm even gonna leave all this in. I want the people to hear you struggle. So I'm just saying, like, Gino, we're just kindred spirits with Gino here. We're flowing right now. We're just flowing.
Perfect.
So
I like it.
I think you start, Pat.
Well, I mean, I just as we tend to ask a lot of the caddies that come on with us, you know, tell us your story. We want to know how you got into looping, who else you might have carried for, and
sure.
And how's it going with Joel?
Okay, so let's see how we got started. Joel and I grew up together. I grew up in northern Idaho. He grew up in eastern Washington, separated by the Snake River there. And I'm 4 years older than Joel, but we always, when he was really little and was kind of in my teens, we kind of played at the same level. So we became pretty good buddies because when I was, you know, 13 and he was 9, we were kind of the same, which is, you know, shows how far I felt like I was a decent golfer and he was just way ahead of the curve. So we've known each other for a really long time. And then I'm sure you guys have heard Joel's cancer story. And, you know, he had cancer and he moved in and lived with us after UW. He moved in with my wife and I and then turned pro and moved to Scottsdale and got cancer. And from there, and went to play on the Canadian Tour. He always calls himself like the mayor of the Canadian Tour because he was up there for so long. But in 2014, finally won the money list. And in the interim, sorry, I'm kind of focusing on Joel. I'll go back to me because I'm the important one in this conversation. But so in the meantime, I graduated from the University of Idaho and went through the PGM program. So I got a business degree and was an assistant. I never really got my professional status, even though I had completed everything to become a Class A professional. And then one day I got offered a job. I was working at the Holly Country Club over there in the Seattle area and got offered a job outside of golf and decided to take it and ended up working for an internet company. We provided satellite internet all over the world and traveling to Afghanistan and Iraq and all sorts of places doing that. So a world away from the golf business for sure. But I learned a lot. I was there for a few years. And then Joel won the money list in 2014. And I had just had a little boy, Hudson. And I didn't want to go to Afghanistan anymore. And I said, please let me come and caddy for you. And I don't know if he did it as a favor or if he felt like I would be the best man for the job or whatnot. But he said, come on. So went down. I started in 2015 with him at the Leo Mexico event. Had no idea what I was doing. I just figured being a decent golfer would kind of translate into being a good caddy. And it took me a while. I'm still learning out here. But, yeah, so I've been with him ever since. He finished 66th on the first year on the money list to keep his card. And last year, you know, he was the bubble boy. Kept it by a few hundred bucks. And here we are. But I've only worked for Joel full time.
Well, so what's the biggest, like in your time being a caddy, what's the biggest mistake that you've made on the bag and what were the repercussions?
Boy, you know what? I've given a couple bad numbers and Joel usually doesn't get numbers. It's just all on me. I have given a couple. Joel's actually handled it really well. So, you know, I've used a middle number as a front number before. And so I think we were 14 yards off on that particular hole I can think of. And he made par, so it wasn't that big deal. The one I felt the worst about was my first PGA Tour event this year. We were at the Anderson. And Joel didn't play very well in the first round. I think he shot a couple over, and I don't remember what the cut was, but maybe like two under. And we start the day pretty well. I think he makes an early birdie and then birdies four in a row before we make the turn. And I'm like, we're rolling. We're inside the cut line. And then he makes a couple more to start the back. And we're well within the cut line at this point. And then he three putts, and then does something else, makes a stupid bogey. And we get to our 17th hole. We need to finish. I think we need to finish birdie. And hits it right down the middle on our 17th hole. I believe it was number 8. And there were the sprinkler heads that were unmarked. They're just A, B heads. And I had them switched in my book. And again, I'm like, you know, it's 1:30. and he flags a wedge. Like, I mean, it is beautiful, and it is 20 yards short of the green.
Oh, yeah.
He looks at me, and he goes, "That was a bad number, wasn't it?" And I'm looking at my book. I'm like, "How did I screw this up?" And I was off the wrong head. And he turned around and smoked the bag with his wedge. And this is embarrassing on me, but so we finished the round. He ends up bogeying 18 as well. He got it up and down for par on 17, bogeys 18. So the hole I gave him the bad number on was the only par he made in the last four holes. And he gets done, and my first PGA Tour event ever, I start crying, like tearing up. Like, and his girlfriend comes over, and she's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "I'm pretty sure I'm going to get fired." She goes, "Why? What happened?" I was like, "I gave him a bad number on 17. And he comes out, he can see tears in my eyes. And he's like, "What's wrong with you?" I'm like, "Dude, I feel so bad. I'm so sorry." Joel's so laid back. He's like, "Who cares?" He's like, "That's the only par I made in the last four holes." So he didn't even, it wasn't that. I felt so much guilt right then that, I don't know, that I try to check and triple check everything, but it happened a few times. And this week may have been the most hostile exchange we've ever had with each other. You guys mind if I just, sorry, I feel like I'm talking way too much.
No, you're we're interviewing you. You're supposed to.
just flow. And you know, we can always edit this. You know, we're not live.
Share the hostility with us.
You might just cut this whole thing out. I don't know, but
nope.
I'll just tell you a story. So, have you guys been around this golf course? Are you familiar with it at all? Very much.
I have not. Just from the research we've done, you know, kind of know the course through that. So
the 15th is a par 5. It's, you know, if you get it in the fairway, it's a pretty easy hole, but played in the practice round, and there's a bunker out there. The center of the bunker is dead center in the middle of the fairway. And we played in the practice round, and I walked it beforehand, and Joe goes, "What's my line here?" I said, "Sure, that bunker's perfect right in the middle." I said, "Okay," and he hit a great shot in the practice round. And then yesterday, we had like a 40-minute wait on the tee. I don't know what happens, a lot of lost golf balls or something. So when we first get up to the tee, we're kind of, you know, just chit-chatting. I'm like, center of the bunker here. And then we just go about our business and wait forever. And it's like 20 minutes later when it's finally time to hit. He steps up and he goes, "Left side of the bunker." And the bunker's pretty wide. So there is a big difference between left side of the bunker and center of the bunker. And I go, "No, that doesn't gain you anything to aim it at the left side." And he just looks at me confused. He goes, "What?" I'm like, "It doesn't gain you anything." He goes, "I don't know what you mean." He goes, "Can I hit it at the left side of the bunker?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you can." But I'm thinking in my head, why would you want to do that? So he aims at the left side of the bunker and kind of pull hooks one. I'm thinking, "Oh, there's a creek that runs down if you hit it too far left." And we walk off the front of the tee box. It's kind of, you can't see that creek from the tee. But he walks off and he goes, "There's a creek over there?" And he loses it on me. And I'm like, "Yeah, man, let's center of the bunker was the target." He was like, "That's what I was asking you, center of the bunker or left edge?" But in my head, I was thinking, well, we've already talked about the center of the bunker multiple times. So it was just a communication error, I guess. But he
just,
was
just
hot.
Like a marriage.
It totally is. Especially, you know, we spend so much time together. And we got down there. Thankfully, his ball was like a foot out of the hazard and hit it on the green and made a birdie. But the walk from the front of the tee to the ball was a good one.
David and I have multiple conversations that are quite similar, but obviously in a different realm. But I think we even had one today, though, didn't we, David?
Yeah, we did. Thank God we're not in each other's we don't see each other in person a lot. It's a lot of phone call interaction. Because if we did, I think we would probably hit each other.
Yeah, Joel's awesome, and it rarely happens. We get along really well on the golf course. We have a lot of fun out there, and but once in a while, when you're that together that much, you know, stuff's bound to happen like that.
So, what was the last thing maybe said or kind of done on the golf course that just made you laugh like crazy, laugh out loud, I mean, almost wet yourself?
This is a tough question.
There's a lot of story that led up to this story, so I'll just give you a snippet in the middle of the bigger picture. But we decided, we dropped down and played a web event earlier this year. We played in Nashville, and he played really well in the first round, and he shot 6 under. Our goal was to, you know, it was kind of an odd. We didn't need to play it because we already had our top 200 locked up, but we liked Nashville, so we decided that we were going to go, and my wife flew out. She really likes Nashville, too. So fast forward through a bad round on Friday and a bad round on Saturday, and we find ourselves doing split tees off the backside on Sunday. We're like last and, you know, 65th place to make the turn. And Joel goes, "Do you think we can shoot under par on this last 9 without using a yardage book or a pin sheet?" I think we can do it. So we're not allowed to look at sprinkler heads walking up to our ball. Obviously, we kind of know where we are because of the clubs we hit the previous days, but we're not allowed to look at the pin sheet. So, you know, if one's 30 deep instead of 5 deep, we're just kind of guessing. So I think it's our fourth hole doing this, and we're like closing our eyes walking by sprinkler heads, and I don't even remember who we were playing with, but our balls are kind of next to each other in the fairway, and Joel and I are, and they're hitting first. And Joel's like, "Does it look like a 9 or an 8? Like, "I think it's a 9. He goes, "Yeah, I like 9 too. It looks maybe like a good 9. He grabs his 9 or hits his 9. I'm like, maybe 155. And then we kind of go quiet for a second. And the guy behind us, I hear his caddy go, "Yep, like 190. And perfect 6 iron or whatever it was, and he grabs 6. And Joel looks at me, and he just loses it. I guess it was one of those kind of you had to be there things, but we were so far off with our number. I don't know how we got there. And just, I think we were kind of in a goofy mood anyway. Just
practically. Clearly, yeah.
Being idiots out there on the golf course, not using the yard book. I mean, it didn't matter.
So did he hit the 9? Did he hit the 9? Did
no.
he just
own it? We heard that. We heard that, and we made it. I think we went to 7. I think he made a par on the hole. But that's kind of Joel in a nutshell, was that type of thing. You know, that's, I don't know, that doesn't speak very professional of us, but it truthfully didn't matter with 8 holes to play at the bottom of a web leaderboard.
So We've done some digging on you, and we got to hear about you being in the Guinness Book of World Records. I mean, first off, what possessed you to do that? And also talk us through that. Cause it's a pretty cool story.
I love golf.
Clearly.
And I bought the Guinness book for my brother-in-law, who's a few years younger than us. I bought it for him for Christmas, like in 2010. And I always thought that was a really cool book growing up. I loved flipping through pages and just reading all the world records. So he opens it up. He's like, "You know, cool." And I took it from him after everybody's done opening presents, and I'm flipping through it. I go to the golf section and see that the current world record, and there's a world record in there for the most number of holes played in a week. And it was 1,800, I believe, right on the nose. It might have been 1,801. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, I can play 1,800 holes in a week. And then I started doing a little bit of math. That's 100 rounds in a week. That's, you know, 14 point whatever whole rounds per day. And then I started thinking, trying to break it down how fast that was per round to play in northern Idaho. I'm like, oh, man, maybe I couldn't do that. But I was kind of intrigued by it. And then my wife has a cousin who has a really rare disease called cystinosis. I don't know as much about it as I should, but your body doesn't filter cystine, and your organs kind of crystallize and harden. And there's it's pretty rare, so there's not a lot of government funding research to cure it. So my wife was like, why don't you do a fundraiser where you golf a bunch and raise money for research for that? And I thought, all right, that's kind of a cool idea. So I went out one day and I went to see how fast I could play around with my cart. I think I played it in like right at an hour. So I thought, well, if I do it, you know, the longest days of the year, I'll be able to do it, but it's going to be a buttload of golf. So I applied with Guinness in January or February of 2011 and planned on doing it end of June, 1st of July of that same year. And that whole time I was rounding up volunteers to help me out because the rules were very strict. I had to play by the rules of golf all the way through. The course had to be at least 6,000 yards, so obviously not long, but not a par 3 course either. So I played a 6,000-yard par 72, so obviously pretty easy. But I had volunteers that had to keep score. I had to have two independent scorekeepers rotate in and out every 4 hours. Like nobody could work more than 4 consecutive hours. So 4 hours ended up equating to basically 4 rounds of golf. So every 70
wow.
holes, I would switch scorekeepers. So I started on a Monday morning at 4:22 a.m. And by Monday night, when I shut it down, I played 18 rounds that day, which was 324 holes. And when I woke up Tuesday morning, I didn't think I would be able to play anymore because I didn't do a whole lot of training. Like, I'm not one for a lot of exercise or anything like that. I had a bucket of balls every day at lunch during my lunch break, and that was about the extent of my training. I ate a lot of nachos.
You're in good company here. Yeah, you are.
Perfect. Yeah, running sucks. But anyway, so yeah, that Tuesday morning, I got up and my forearms were swollen and the pad of my left thumb was just gone. And I wish, looking back, if I were ever to have to do it again, I would just protect my hands more than anything else. My hands were just, if club felt like a razor blade. But I made it through the week. The first round every morning was miserable, but I played 111 rounds. Plus two extra holes for a total number of 2,000 holes in a week. And I believe I'm still the current world record holder for that number.
A couple questions. First, how many birdies did you make?
I made 493 birdies.
Oh. Which is also a record too, right?
That is also a Guinness World Record. And truthfully, I had a third world record that I thought would be the hardest one to beat of the three. And I don't know how it was beat, but I made 67 birdies in 12 hours. And I really thought that was a good one. But the record that I had, that I beat, the guy before me had 59. And, you know, so I upped it to 67. I'm like, those are two really, he'd have to do something crazy to beat me. But last I saw, I think he made like 90 in 12 hours. So I don't know if he made put the hole in the bottom of funnels or what, but that's pretty impressive.
I think if I were to attempt this to beat your record, I wouldn't be able to do it, but I might get the record for the most amount of beers drunk in in a week period if I did that.
I get asked that question a lot, how many beers did I drink that week? And I was afraid that, you know, I would be too dehydrated or something,
yeah.
I guess, the last day. But the final day on Sunday, I had a few. But before that, I was a good boy. I tried to stay hydrated.
Did you have spotters in the fairway?
No, not really. It's my home country club. So I've played it 1,000 times. I generally knew where the ball was as soon as I hit it. There was a lot of holes. Like this 10th hole's almost a drive, just out of drive. It was like 330, a little dogleg left, and there's OB tight right to the green. And there was a lot of times where as soon as I'd make contact with it, I'm like, nope, provisional, you know, and I'd spend 3 into the hillside before I finally got one in play. But yeah, I just kept swinging, you know, I made some big numbers.
That's an amazing risk. So on the Guinness process, like, do you get anything for breaking a Guinness Book of World Record?
They sent me a certificate, and that was the extent of it. So I've got 3 framed certificates in my dad's man cave at his house that say I'm a world record holder.
Did your name go in the book the next year?
No. What they do is they rotate records in and out of the book every year, because I think there's 2 pages dedicated to golf and the way they do the new book, and a lot of them are really stupid, truthfully, and like the largest tire on a golf cart. I'm like, who cares about that? I'm like, I played 2,000 freaking holes in a week, and it's been, 6 years now, and it still hasn't been in the book.
No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is.
All of our listeners can tag Guinness and get them to come off it for the next issue.
I go buy it. Like, it always comes out at the end of the year, so like October, November, it comes out for next year. So the 2018 book will be coming out here in a couple months. And I always like pre-order it on Amazon, and it shows up, and I flip it right to the golf page, and nothing. And I don't even know if I bought last year, so I just get pissed.
That makes me want to break a golf record, Pat. We need to go in there and see if we can find one we can break.
Please don't try to break mine. I don't want to do it again. I feel like now I've had it for so long that it's kind of mine.
Listen, you're obviously a way better stick than we are. If we were to try to play 2,000 holes of golf, like, you realize how many more shots we would have to take, which means a greater toll on our body. It just would never happen.
When you start extrapolating some of the numbers, you know,
yeah,
I averaged like 71.8 that round, and
that just pissed me off.
If you think about somebody, you know, averaging 76, you're like, oh, well, that's pretty good, which is pretty good, but that's 550 strokes, which is a lot of time to make that many strokes. So it definitely helped being a decent golfer to help have that record.
Yeah. That's amazing, man.
I bet our listeners, David, would say that we could probably break the longest golf podcast record.
That's true. That would not be hard. I think we've actually already done that before. We just didn't notify Guinness. We didn't notify Guinness for doing that.
There you go.
Maybe we'll get Gino's help whenever we need to contact Guinness to set something up. Well, all right. If we think of another question about that, we can move on. I want to ask you if you know of any, you know, and I know you haven't been on tour that long, but one of the questions I wanted to ask is, who's a single caddy and or player on the tour that you have seen has the most game with the ladies?
That's an easy one for me. Seamus Power is the man.
Ooh, really?
Ooh, I like that.
Seamus. Pat loves Seamus.
Seamus is just, he's such a good dude. And, you know, being foreign helps that tremendously here, I feel like.
Sure. Yeah.
It's the fact that he's, you know, a 6'3", blonde, good-looking guy on the PGA Tour with that accent. And he's not bashful by any means, but I do know now, though, that he does have a girlfriend. I don't know if they're officially boyfriend-girlfriend type deal, but he does have a lady friend who I met a few weeks ago, and she seemed very nice, and she's very attractive, and he did good work. But
what about who's the worst? Have you seen somebody that just can't make it happen?
I haven't witnessed it. I can make an assumption. Is that mean of me to do? If I just had to guess, and I do not know this person at all.
Better, even better.
Zach Blair.
Why do you say that?
I mean, I don't know. I just feel like he looks like he's 12.
Yeah, he totally does. Yeah, they would all wonder if his mom or dad was going to pick him up for the date.
Well, like, yeah, that's it, you know. My mom will be there at 6:30, but we have to have you home by 9:30. And yeah. I mean, no offense to Zach, because he's probably a great guy, but I don't know.
Well, yeah. If you follow him on Twitter, you would know that. I mean, he would probably end up talking about the butt club the entire date.
The butt club. Yep. Oh, exactly. God. Retweet for a free hat.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Oh God, I wonder if he's wearing like junior buck club hat, because I don't know that he's.
So I didn't know this until, and you guys might be able to fill me in, but so the buck club is just like a fictional golf club that they
yes,
want to be
yes,
built.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
It took me a little while to figure that one out too.
Which actually kind of further solidifies the little kid thing. It's like his imaginary friend, but it's his imaginary golf course.
Yeah, I thought it was some awesome club in Utah or something that was just
no.
Awesome. But yeah, okay. I didn't know that until recently.
Yeah, that's pretty funny that you. Yeah, that's just pretty funny. Okay, another story. How did you end up breaking both of your arms playing golf?
The course I grew up playing borders our airport in our town. It's dog leg left, par 4, and if you lose it right, it's over the airport fence, and which is 6 feet of chain link with 2 feet of barbed wire on top of it. No trespassing all over it, but every hack in the world slices the golf ball, and there's 150 golf balls on the other side of this fence, and I'm a 13-year-old kid, and golf balls to me are like gold. And I'm like, I can get over this fence. And me and my buddy were out there, and he was like, oh, yeah, you can do it. So I climbed to the top of this thing, and I put one leg over, and I kind of get the second leg on top of one of the strips of barbed wire, and I go to jump, and one of the barbs hooked the back of my shoe and hung me up and just flipped me over, and I went straight to the ground with both arms extended. And I hit, and my arms collapsed, and I hit my face on the ground on the other side, and I'm laying there just kind of going, oh, and he's like, are you okay? And I'm kind of rolling around on the ground, and I'm like, no, I broke my arm. And he goes, and I'd never broken a bone, but I just knew it was broken. He goes, which one? I was like, my right. No. It was my left. I broke my left. And it never dawned on me that I could break both arms. And so I'm on the other side of this airport fence with two broken arms. And I don't know how the hell I'm going to get back over to the golf course, because I know I need to go to the hospital. And my buddy's like, hey, get some of those golf balls. All right. So, I start kind of kicking them into a little pile, and then pretty quick, I'm like, the hell with this. I am hurting. So, there was three of us there, and one guy was able to lift the bottom of the fence up just high enough. When I was 13, I probably only weighed 80 pounds anyway, but, and I laid down and kind of, kicked with my feet and tried to push myself back through where he was lifting up, and one guy grabbed me by my neck and pulled me back through. And we walked in and took me to the hospital.
I have a similar story, but I was much, much older. Actually, it was only 4 years ago, but it wasn't on the golf course. I was leaving a Falcons game, and I couldn't find where our car was in the parking lot. And then we finally found it, and it was over this fence. And I just decided that I was just going to climb the fence and jump over it. Same kind of deal. Tried to jump. Got caught up in the fence, but I landed on my heel and broke my heel, and it was the most painful thing that has ever happened to me. So.
Yeah, that's brutal.
But
did you end up in a cast, or what'd they do?
No, I was in a boot for 2 months. But I was 36 years old, whereas you were 13, so I don't really have much of an excuse for the stupidity.
Yeah, no,
yeah, yours probably hurt way worse. But broken feet stink.
Yeah, well, sure. So I guess that just that you didn't get to play golf for a little while after that.
No, I did. My left one was broke pretty bad. They had to set it and they casted it all the way up to my armpit at a 90-degree angle, but my right one I could straighten. It only went up to my elbow. I did, it speaks to my golf dorkdom, I guess, for lack of a better word, but I did try playing golf in casts one time. It's tough when your left arm's bent to a 90, though.
Well, how many golf balls were you able to retrieve?
You know, I didn't end up getting a single golf ball. It was miserable.
I love that they asked you to do that. That's the best.
Yeah, right? Hey, Gino, you go over. Okay, yeah. That sounds great.
All right, we got to talk about this application to Rory's caddy position.
Okay.
Obviously, you're a pretty funny guy. Anybody that doesn't follow you on Twitter needs to, because we just learned that it's a good account. By the way, what's your Twitter handle for everybody that's listening?
It's just my full name, Gino Benelli.
All right. Are you like in the mafia, the Gino?
Right.
If we rub you the wrong way, are you going to break our leg?
I'm not in the mafia. I do own a chain of pizza places and some right. shops, though. New York.
you got some notoriety here recently because you tweeted out an application to hop on the bag for Rory. As we all know, he just let go his man of 9 years. And currently one of his buddies is on the bag, but you know, it sounds like he could be persuaded and it's open for application.
I sure hope so. That'd be awesome. I know Rory is like, has been my favorite player. Like, watching him hit the golf ball is like golf porn for me. It's awesome. I love watching him swing it. And, truthfully, how I even thought of the idea, I was waiting in the airport coming here to Greensboro, and that dubbed over interview of him popped up on my Twitter somewhere. That person, whoever did that, was unbelievable.
Hilarious.
Now, like, their ums and pauses were just so spot on. And the first time I listened to it, I didn't actually watch the video because it was kind of loud around me. So I just picked it up and held it by my ear. And I was dying because I thought it was Rory. And I thought he was just being hilarious and messing with the media. And it made me so happy. I wish more guys would actually say stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. That video is amazing.
Yeah, it was so good, and I thought, Rory has a sense of humor. This is awesome. I'm gonna do something, say something funny to him. So as I'm getting on my plane, I think flying from Chicago here, I just typed this little deal on my phone in the notepad, and I landed and I sent it to Joel. I'm like, is this funny or is this stupid? And he goes, oh, that's hilarious. He's like, you should tweet that. And I couldn't figure out, because it's kind of long.
Yeah.
But I couldn't figure out how to get the whole thing out there. So I emailed it to my wife, and I'm like, hey, could you pull this up on your computer and just take a picture of the email and send it back to me? So she did. And I put it out there, you know, just truthfully, I figured my 42 followers and Joel would be the only people that ever saw it. But,
well,
it became kind of a big thing.
Well, what's funny is, you again, I've mentioned this, you feel like a kindred spirit to us. First of all, you're clearly a big-time golf nut, which we are as well. I mean,
yeah,
you know, we do the fantasy golf stuff, but we love actual golf more than anything in the world. But also, another way that you're like us is, you have to sometimes vet your tweets through your wife. So, like, we are constantly, more my wife than Pat's wife, but we are constantly going to my wife and being like, okay, is this okay? Or should we do this? And a lot of times we get shot down because my wife is very, you know, she's conservative and she doesn't want us to look bad or do something dumb.
Yeah.
You know,
it's good to have wives like that.
Yes, it's, that's very funny that, that you did that. We can totally empathize with that.
Yeah,
and know, Pat can empathize with your technology troubles of getting it on on Twitter because he doesn't have a clue what he's doing.
It's a what I've learned is a pain, but yeah, you don't want to be you don't want to be too offensive. You need to do it like tastefully funny, but still, you know, I don't know, little jokes.
You want to be edgy, you know, you. That's what sells, right? But anyway, I want to talk about the highlights of this letter here.
Okay.
I mean, I think reading the whole thing is ideal. We will spare the listener that for now. But if they haven't read it, they must go read it. But basically, you're writing a letter to Mr. McElroy, is how you address it, and you would like to formally apply for the position. And I love right off the bat. I helped lead Joel to a solo 68 finish at the Reno Tahoe Open, a T80 MDF in Puerto Rico, and my favorite line, and also helped him make four consecutive birdies in the Sanderson Farms Championship, which now we've learned in that same round, you effed him up on number 17.
We can't talk
the wrong
about that,
number.
But, don't
but,
point
you know,
that out.
Yeah, in any job application, you want to make yourself look good. And then, please don't think I'm sneaking around Joel behind Joel's back. He may also be applying for the position. It's fantastic. And then, of course, it won't be awkward because we already know each other. We played in front of you on Saturday at the Travelers, and during the wait on the fourth tee box, I asked if you wanted a water, which you politely declined, so we're pretty much best friends already. So, you know, you're making the personal connection. You know, so far I think this is going well. And then you list your strengths. Right, your strengths as a caddy. I'm really, really good at numbers, especially at elevation. You want me to take 2% off 157? Bam, 154. You want decimal point? And then I like this. I know you're good, but Joel and I usually work in whole yard.
I know. I don't know if a lot of people picked up on that one, but I like that line.
Love the whole yard thing. I'm an excellent bunker raker, which we've asked a lot of caddies on our podcast before about the bunker technique thing. And when I caddied for Bauta two holes in the Players Championship last year, I really, that was my big first mistake on hole number one. I just, normal golfers do not know how the PGA Tour caddies rake bunkers, and that's the part.
Just kind of move the sand around in 7 holes.
Right. I'm one of the best in the world. You would be a stat machine on with a bunker rake. And then during practice rounds, I like making various bets.
This is one of my favorites because there's a lot in this line that I need clarification on, because you say that you had bets on various things with Joel, and you know, you made $370 this year betting on 3-footers. It's a nice supplemental income. I need to know, like, which way did these bets go? I mean, were they betting for a miss or a make? I mean,
I want to make him try to be his best, so I always take the negative side. So, you know, I'll bet you $5 he missed this 3-footer. And,
is that something you guys do in a tournament round? Like, during a tournament round?
Not on 3-footers, but, if it's a difficult shot, we absolutely bet on a shot. He's like, what are the odds I get this on the green? You know, if one's buried in the rough behind some trees, I'm like,
but you're not doing it on 3-footers.
No, never on 3-footers.
Okay, good.
Not in competition anyway. We might in the practice round.
Okay. Yeah. Practice round's one thing. I also like, you know, my shortcomings as a caddy are also pretty good. You're talking about, you know, some potential areas or opportunities for improvement. If you make me keep our playing partner's score, I sometimes lose track of what they made on a hole because I'm so focused on what we're doing. And then I love this part. In parentheses, see what I did there? I turned a negative into a positive. Which is just awesome. Like, just like Pat and I come from the corporate world where, like, we've interviewed people, we've been in interviews, and they teach you how to interview, and it's all that garbage. And I love that you, like, kind of work in some of that dumb stuff. Anyway, you probably have a lot of follow up questions you'd like to ask me. Go ahead and have your agent get a hold of my agent, and I'm sure we can figure something out. that's just, it's beautiful. It's well done. So let's
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I know that, you know, it's been featured in a few little golf channel or Golf Digest write-ups or anything else. Have you heard from Rory? Because I know you tagged him. Did you get anything from Rory?
Damn it, Rory.
Oh, come on,
get
Rory.
Get a hold of me, man. Come on. Follow me back on Twitter. Direct message me. We can work this out.
Right. I mean, let's all be honest, Gino. Like, I hate to be I don't know if anyone's, you know, we'll be the Marcus Lemonis in The Prophet or Simon Cowell on American Idol. You're not going to get the job, okay, buddy? You're just not. But Rory needs to, at minimum, retweet that thing or follow you or whatever. It's freaking hilarious.
You know what? It would make my day is if he just said, hey, that made me laugh.
Yeah, that would be great. He needs to do that.
That would be nice.
He needs to do that. Maybe if enough of our listeners, like, tag him and annoy him to death, maybe that'll work. Maybe not.
I'm not holding my
back. Pat and I also thought of some follow-up questions that, you know, like, let's just say we're Rory's agent, kind of, and we're like, you know, Mr. McIlroy has a few additional questions he'd like to get answered before maybe your formal in-person face-to-face with Rory. So if you're up for that, we'd like to kind of see what you got on some of those, put you on the spot a little bit. Does that sound good?
I'll do my best. These could be bad, though.
Pat, you want to start with that, or you want me to go?
No, I'll start us off here.
Why don't you go, yeah.
All right, so Rory's grabbing a 3-wood on the tee, and you know he needs to pull that driver because he's just striping that driver. What do you say?
Ooh, I think I pose it as a question, kind of. What are you planning on doing with that one there, bud? You know? Make him draw me a picture of what he thinks, and then I draw him a picture of what I think, and see which picture he likes better.
Is this a mental picture, or do you carry around a pad where you can write the picture?
Draw it in the article.
I definitely do that with Joel. Draw little pictures in the yard book. No, that bunker's in play with this club, so we want to hit it to this location, which is a little bit farther.
Okay, good detail there. All right, so what would be the one thing Rory would get from you that no other caddy can provide?
That no other caddy could provide? That's a tough one.
Maybe free pizza at all your pizza chain restaurants.
Yeah, that's right. At all of my my Gino's pizza shops in New York City.
Yeah.
No, I don't. There's so many. I mean, everybody. That sounds a terrible answer, but everybody's a good caddy out here. I feel like I'm more fun than most, but I don't mean that. And people view that as like a negative thing, like I'm a goofball or something. When it's time to be serious, I'm serious. But. I always like to have a good time out there, and maybe that Joel's personality has rubbed off on me. But there's a lot of guys that are just so stiff and I don't know, tight. And I'm just like, man, this looks miserable. Like, I don't know. I love golf is fun, and I like having fun with it. Even after we make double bogey on our 18th hole today, I still love it. Yeah. I love what I do. Here's one thing he won't get from me. Here, I just thought of an answer. No one will enjoy their job more than I will. I absolutely love doing what I do.
Mm. Mm. Oh, okay, I like that.
If we're
like
interviewing
that.
You, we just wrote that down. We did.
I've got to circle
around it, but I found it. There it was.
Yeah, there you go.
I've got one more, and then I'm going to let my partner... My agent partner David asked the rest here, but so Rory is as you know, I think it was a Ryder Cup maybe where or something, I don't know. He overslept and missed a tee time.
Okay.
So yeah. I need to know. I mean, what method of alarm clock do you recommend, and what sound would be best to prevent this from happening again?
You guys watch Seinfeld?
Oh God!
Oh man. God.
You touched the nerve here. Touched the nerve.
Uh-oh,
I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. No, I love Seinfeld.
Well, remember the episode when Kramer sets his mental clock for the marathon runner?
Yes.
He said Kramer insists that his alarm clock always goes off on time, and there's a whole episode about it. But I always set my mental alarm, and you got to have the iPhone with two alarms set, two different ones, 3 minutes apart.
That's the technique.
What's the sound? What's the sound of choice?
Ooh, you know what? I wish I had a better answer. I think it's just some lame common ringtone.
I was listening to, I don't know if you, Gina, if you listen to any other podcasts other than this fantastic podcast, but I listened to the Pat McAfee Show, which is a Barstool sports podcast, yeah. And it's pretty funny. And Pat McAfee, the former punter for the Indianapolis Colts, retired at age 29 to basically join Barstool and be funny and drunk for the rest of his life, and he's really good at both of those things. He recently talked about he changed his alarm to this song that is like, I've never heard the song before, but it's like a pump up song. Like it starts kind of like it almost
like
sounds
Eye
like
of
a
the
movie.
Tiger?
Yeah, 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 yeah. It sounds like a movie score, like where it kind of starts and it a little more subtle, but it builds quickly, and then it's like a yeah, and it just he's saying it's like changed his life that he gets out of bed ready to roll. And maybe
that's awesome. I'm going to have to look into that.
Try that. Yeah, try that. Tell Joel
like
to try
that.
It, and if he goes out and like wins a tournament, we need credit for that.
Joel needs to try it. He's going to need a little pumped up tomorrow morning. I'll let him know.
There you go. And y'all can have your Seinfeld thing. I never really got into Seinfeld. Never really got it. But okay, Rory. Here's another one. Rory needs a good nickname, right? You got to give him one. Like.
Yeah, I'm gonna struggle with this just because it's so much easier to give somebody a nickname if you know them personally.
That's true.
I heard that Nolane Up nicknamed him McRib, which
I
thought was pretty kind of funny. But I don't know. I feel like I can't answer that one without knowing him a little better. Yeah. I don't even have a good one for Joel, truthfully. I just call him JD, which is just what I call
him.
Cliche.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Do you have a nickname, Gina? Do you have a nickname you go by?
My mom calls me Bambino.
Yeah, you're definitely Italian or something.
Right?
You're in the
sometimes
mafia.
My wife... Yeah, my mom calls me... Or my not my mom, my wife calls me Bam. Sometimes she shortened that one up. But that's about it, I would say.
All right, here's a tough one. This is tough because, you know, sometimes you caddy player relationships, they get close, and, you know, sometimes it's not just about, you know, I don't know if you've learned this yet, Gino, but let us help you. It's not just always about caddying your guy through the golf course, but sometimes it's about, and the fairways on the golf course, but it's about caddying him through the fairways of life, okay? Rory is having marriage. He's having marriage issues at home with his new bride, and he's taking it out on you on the course. You know he is. Okay? Do you take it? Do you slap him around a little bit, rough him up, tell him to man up? Or do you take kind of the Dr. Phil approach, and you say, hey, man, I know things are going on. Let's talk about it. Like, what's the Bambino approach?
Okay, before I can answer that question, I need a couple things from you. I need you to pay me a better picture. What day of the week is it?
This is a Thursday, round one of an event. And when you left Wednesday practice round, things were great. And you show up Thursday to the practice sesh, things aren't so great. He lets you know a little bit that there's some tension with the wife. You know, you kind of brush it off, but as the day is unfolding, you're like on number six fairway, and things start happening, and you're feeling the heat.
Are we over par?
You're not over par. You're Bill Haas-ing the crap out of the golf course right now. You're just parring the thing to death. But it's basically a fetch field where par is no good. You got to be slaying
par
birdie.
Par is no good. The fact that it's early in the week, and he made a comment about it on Wednesday. The fact that he made a comment about it means he probably wants to talk about it.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask him, hey man, you know, are you okay? I'm going to play the Dr. Phil role. Let's talk about
okay.
it. You know, a lot of times there's a lot of situations where you just wear it and just let him, going to meow at you or whatever the case may be. But
right,
I feel like if that's the situation that you just painted for me, he probably wants to talk about it after he gets it off his chest. You know, we're only six holes in. We got 66 to play. Let's go get it.
Okay, I like that approach. All right, but let me throw a curveball. Okay, tell me about a time. Right, it's one of these interview questions. What if you bring that up and he's kind of closed off-ish still, and he's like, we just kind of got into it, and things aren't right, and I don't know, man. Let's just play golf, you know.
But then he doesn't really want to talk about it.
Yeah, but then six holes later, he lets you have it again for something dumb. Like, basically what I'm asking is, would there be a point where you just rough him up, and you're like, listen, man, and you grab him by the blade Nike collar, and you look him in the eye, and you go, listen, you get your together right now. You know what I mean? Like, man up, and let's do this. At what point does that happen, or does it happen?
I feel like there's always a time for all three of those things, and it all depends on their attitude. So, a time, yeah, if he makes a number on a hole and is kind of just losing his shit a little bit, and it's kind of been negative all day, and we've just been chugging along at that pace, and anything else isn't working, and he's upset about a bad hole, sometimes you just have to do that. And it's a hard thing to do because you don't know what the repercussion is going to be. You don't know how he's going to respond to that. But sometimes it kind of snaps them out of it a little bit, like, oh, I'm out of line right now. So it's necessary sometimes, and it could get to that point. Yeah, I'm going to have to grab Rory by his blade collar, as you said, like that.
That's you handle that really well. Again, like, you're an interviewee expert right now. Like, you're just there was really no right answer. It's situational. It's needs based, right?
You got to read
them and make the right decision. All right, we kind of have one more. So the last one is, Rory comes to you. He wants your opinion on this hot new logo that his people just rolled out for him, right? And it's basically an R and an M intertwined. Right. What do you say? What's your feedback?
The initials are so lame. Everybody does that. Or
thank you, God. Just, all right, you got the job.
Just mirrors. The only good ones that are initials, and I don't know if you guys can picture it in your head, but if it's something like the old school Milwaukee Brewers, where it's the M and the B, or that forms a glove. Or Washington State University, how WSU makes a cougar. Can you guys picture that one? That's the best one in college.
Oh, yeah. I can picture that one better than the Brewers one. But yeah,
I have the Brewers in my head, too. So.
The WSU one is awesome because it's a cougar, and it's easier to see the cougar than it is the WSU. But as far as just plain mirrored letters or things intertwined,
But like, how do you approach Rory on that? Like, what do you say?
I don't know. I would be like, dude, that's lame. Just straight up. You should get a better graphic designer there, partner.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I know you've listened to a couple of shows of ours. Did you hear our recent rant on player logos?
I did not hear the recent rant.
Okay, good. So that makes me even happier with your answer that you felt that way without knowing that we feel that way. But a couple episodes ago, we kind of got into it. We kind of picked on Terrell Hatton on Twitter because he launched his new logo, which, honestly, of all the logos that are like initials, his is actually kind of cool looking. But we commented and poked fun at him and kind of said, yeah, I mean, no one does that anymore. Like, very creative. You need something else.
Cool.
And then on the podcast, we kind of talked about all the players that have logos and like the initials logos and how they're all kind of played out. And there's a lot of players you even wouldn't imagine even had logos, like Fabian Gomez and JJ Henry, and their first initial, last initial deals. And we take
mashed together.
Yeah, and it's just so overdone right now. And I mean, Tiger started it, I think.
Yeah,
but Tiger's Tiger.
And Pat and I kind of got into a little heated debate about, in the old days. Yeah, because we talked about our logo, which is a squirrel, right? Like, I mean, we have the TJ on a couple of things, but the squirrel is our predominant major logo. And, you know, back in the day, you had the bear, the golden bear with Jack. You had the shark with Greg Norman. You had the black knight with Gary Player.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we need to see some more of that.
More creative. Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm saying.
I think
kind of got into it.
I think if I could have one, it would it'd be Will Ferrell standing there in a bathrobe, one of the bathrobe scenes from Wedding Crashers or something like that. I don't know if that'd be allowed, but I feel like that'd be funny for me. yeah, no, I agree. The initials are just
they're played out,
boring, whatever.
Well, Pat suggested that like Terrell Hatton be like the raccoon for some dumb reason. It doesn't even make sense, but that's what we're calling now on the podcast.
That's something that would like catch on though, and then everybody would just know him as a raccoon. That would be funny.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. That was what I was thinking.
You know, just take innocent weird animal or something.
Well, we kind of have a little thing going with Kevin Kisner, who's one of our boys. When you see him this weekend at the Wyndham, you know, holler out "Who lit the kids?" That's our
"Who lit the kids." All right. And I have to ask you. I follow you guys on Twitter. I've listened to a couple shows. And I apologize for not knowing this. I have two questions for you, though. Mm-hmm. Who is Golby? Is that like your squirrel mascot?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Pat, do you want to tell him the story on that?
No, I'll let you do it, because I mispronounce names when we do that story.
Oh, wow. Okay. So the squirrel is a blind squirrel, and it's based off the idea of a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then, which
Love
is
that.
What we do.
Creative.
Betting golf, fantasy golf. Golf in general is just so variable, and that's just what it is. So we had the squirrel first, but then we were like, man, we gotta have a name for this guy. Like, we can't just have a squirrel. We gotta have a name. So, you know, we're from Augusta, both of us born and raised in Augusta. The Masters is a huge part of our lives every year and has been since we were kids. And we just love golf. So we were sitting around, and one of our friends who actually helped design Golby, said, well, what about Bob Golby? And we were like, who? And he said, yeah, Bob Golby was an old PGA Tour golfer who won the Masters because DiVincenzo signed an incorrect scorecard.
I remember that. Okay. And I didn't know who won,
but
all right.
Yeah, so we looked up the story, and it's like, 1968, he walked off the course having tied for the lead, and at that point they were going to play a Monday 18-hole playoff, and it was going to be DiVincenzo, and he signed the incorrect card, got the penalty, and they gave it to Golby, which, you know, he's argued since that day that clearly he could have gone out on Monday and won the playoff and won it outright, but you can't deny that he won it with a little bit of luck. I mean, he got a green jacket and a membership at the National for the rest of his life because that guy made a dumb move. So, and it happening in our hometown at the Masters, and so we just said Golby is his name, and so he spelled just like Bob Golby. So that's our
perfect.
Story.
That's a great story. And then one more. What is Bohm? Am I even pronouncing that correctly?
Yes. I'll tell that story too. So Pat and I went to the Ryder Cup this past year. And we'd never been before, and it was the most phenomenal sporting event we'd ever been to. And it was the night that the U.S. won the Ryder Cup. We were staying at a friend's house there in Minnesota, a really nice house. And he had a basketball court indoors. And me and Pat, also known as DirecTV Perry, were playing basketball in the house. It was like midnight. And we had been, you know, on the course all day. Pat is definitely a day drinking beer fan. And then we got to that house that evening. We started working on some double oak aged Woodford bourbon. And so everyone, me, Pat, and his brother, were very loose and feeling good. And me and his brother were actually playing basketball in our underwear. And Pat had passed out for a second and had gotten up and found us in there, and he walked in
and he's, you know, first of all, shocked at what's going on. And I'm like, and I'm pressuring him. I'm like, Pat, shoot. First of all, I'd seen Pat play basketball sober, and it was horrible. So I really wanted him to see, I really wanted to see him play basketball intoxicated. So I'm like, I give him the ball. I'm like, Pat, shoot, man, shoot, shoot. And he's like, looking at us like we're crazy. And he's, and I'm like, I want you to shoot. And he's like, all right. And he gets real confident. He's like, I'm gonna make this, you know. And he's slurring his words. And the last thing he does is he looks in the camera and he tries to say boom, but he's so intoxicated it comes out boom. And then he shoots.
Love
it,
that.
And it's about an 11-foot shot, and he comes up about 3 feet short, never hits the rim. And it's just, it's kind of like your story. Like, it, you really had to be there. And months after the Ryder Cup, I'm watching that video on my phone, and I made a habit of watching it like once a week because it just makes me laugh. And I sent a group text to Pat and another buddy of ours. I'm like, dude, listen to you say boom in this thing. It is just the funniest thing ever. And then we were like, we got to make this a thing. This has to be our thing, that, you know, you say boom instead of boom. So that's where that comes from.
I figured those two words were probably related somehow. But,
you know, thanks for asking that. I appreciate you asking that. That's cool.
You can see a little snippet of that that video on
our
Twitter account. So.
We'll get your number and I'll text you the full video as long as you promise not to put it out, because Pat's very very conscious about that.
that's fair. Everyone thinks it's the dream job, which it is. I absolutely love my job, but it is, I don't know if you've heard this before, but it's okay to ask how much money you make. Like, the first question people ask is, oh, you're a caddy? How much money do you make? That's the first question. I'm like, I don't even know you. And we flew into,
you don't ask anyone else that on any other level.
No one in the world. And apparently it's okay. Like, people, and I've talked to every other caddy, and they're like, oh, yeah, that happens all the time. So we fly into, we're going to the Canadian Open, flying to Buffalo, and we're driving to Toronto, and we're coming across customs, and, you know, the guy's kind of serious, and he's like, why are you guys coming into Canada? I'm like, oh, we're here for the golf tournament. He's like, what are you doing with the golf tournament? I'm like, oh, we're caddies. And he goes, you're a caddy? I'm like, yeah. He goes, that pay pretty well? I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, being a border patrol guard? Exactly. Like, why is that okay to ask? Like, actually, no, it doesn't pay well at all. I made $200 this year so far. Thanks for asking. In the country that has Joel Damon on their squad.
You can check his ownership percentage. I don't know, that's probably pretty low.
I'll have to click on that and see. 0.01.
Do you ever tell him about it? Like, are you ever like, dude, you need to step it up. Your DraftKings price dropped like $400 in the last event.
No, I haven't told him that, but I tell him the weeks that I've got him on my team. I'm like, dude, you can't be making any more doubles.
That's awesome.
One of my roommates this week, he was like, I think he was hitting balls next to Henrik in the on Wednesday, I think. And he's like, oh, Henrik is striping it this week. He was like, it was so fun to sit next to him and hit balls. And I was like, I bet you $5 Joel beats him this week. I was just feeling good about Joel. And he's like, all right, done. So I think I lost the $5.
You might take a hit to that 370 you've earned so far.
That's right.
Yeah, sure. I'd be like, Joel, listen, you pick this up, bro, because I got 5 to 6 through the cut. Guess who's number 6? You, my man. Can we step this up a little bit and make a run?
That's it.